Hi, and welcome to my podcast series, The New Abnormal, which aims to make sense of our COVID-19 world today and tomorrow. I'm Sean P. Lodishenesi, researcher, author, and speaker from Brand Positive. As a researcher, I've spent 20 years conducting ethnographic interviews on global projects. Along the way, I've been lucky enough to have met some amazing people, from psychologists to activists to creatives, some of whom I'll be talking to in this series. I'm also the author of The Post-Truth Business, which focused on trust, empathy, and privacy, while my second book, Influencers and Revolutionaries, looked into innovation, behavioural change, and the climate crisis. So, I hope you enjoy the interviews, and if so, please tell your friends, leave a rating, and watch out for our other episodes. Now, without further delay, let's crack on with today's podcast. So today I'm really pleased to be joined by Elodie Marteau. She's a futures consultant, a foresight strategist and cultural analyst based in Paris. She's passionate about the art of decoding culture and helping businesses identify opportunities to future-proof their brand and marketing strategies. She's been published in an array of areas ranging from The Fashion Network to LSN Global, Trend Atelier, Canvas 8, and the Copenhagen Institute for Future Studies. And back in the day, she was at ESCE International Business School, where she did international marketing, and then in the wonderful University of the Arts London, where she specialised in innovation. So fantastic stuff. So Elodie, hi, and how are you?
Hi, I'm good. And you?
I'm in very good form. Now, we were talking earlier on, just to start on a completely depressing note, but might as well get it out of the way. So I'm in a very sunny, lovely Brighton today. You're in Paris, but you're in Paris where you're still enduring the lockdown, etc., and the curfew. So bring us up to date. What's happening over there? What's it like? And what's the current state of play?
It's not very clear at the moment. We only know that we have another curfew, that we are encouraged to stay at home, probably till the beginning of May. So we're just waiting for some updates, basically, from the government. So I'm just watching the sun by the window.
Yeah. Wow. Well, one of those, isn't it? It is just really tough. But moving on to perhaps happier things and perhaps back to happier things. So just before we get to where you are now, because I know you're doing some really, really interesting stuff and have been doing some really fascinating things over the last few years. But perhaps just take us right back to where you were back at in the University of the Arts London days. So perhaps just talk us through, how it was at college and then how you got going. Because I think certainly we have a very, very wide following of, for instance, students in various parts of the world that listen to the podcast. I think it's always really interesting for them to understand how people like yourselves basically made it work. So yeah, go on then.
Sure. So I guess it all started when I was studying business school and marketing in Paris in a traditional business school. Mm-hmm. And I knew I wanted to do something with marketing, but I guess as a young student, I was a bit bored and I only knew about, let's say, the traditional marketing jobs such as project or product manager. And I remember one day doing some research and finding a book that was like a wow moment for me, let's say. And it was the first edition of the Trend Forecaster Handbook. I think it was written 10 or 11 years ago by Martin Raymond, which is the founder of the Future Laboratory in London. And from this point, I guess it all made sense to me because I knew I wanted to work in the trend forecasting industry because I realized it 100% matched my personal interest. And I remember thinking when I was reading this book, like, oh my God, this is crazy. There is a job that just feels like I will be paid to do what I like, which is basically reading, researching, being curious about people and about the world in general. So from this moment, I guess my absolute goal was to become a trend forecaster. And my dream company was the Future Laboratory. And I remember I did everything I could to achieve this goal, including working every weekend in a store as a student in Paris just to be able to pay for a 2-month summer school program specialized in trend forecasting at Polimoda School in Florence. And at this time, I was especially interested in fashion trends. And I remember I had a blog where that I used as a platform to apply to companies to find an internship to complete my master degree. And basically, I applied everywhere. And at some point, I guess I realized that the trend forecasting industry in Paris was not super developed. So I moved to London. And I started working there for Geraldine Wari. We used to be at WGSN. Then I was hired as a creative account manager at Trendstop. I remember working remotely for Copenhagen Institute for Future Studies as well. And finally, after 4 years of sending many CVs, I got a job at the Future Laboratory. So it was a big day for me. And so I worked there on the client presentation service of the business, which was a very fascinating position, I will say, because I was in between the foresight team, who was in charge of the trend research activities, and the strategy team, as that was dealing directly with client on foresight strategic projects. So it was definitely a great opportunity, and I learned from incredibly talented people who work there and from what they call their foresight framework methodology. And what's really important for me is that I was able to develop my skills of being able to connect the dots, let's say, between trends intelligence in one hand and actual global client challenges in the other hand. And I told you my first love was really the fashion industry. But as I was at the Future Laboratory, I had the chance to work for very, very various industries ranging from fashion to food and drinks, luxury, health and wellness, hospitality and more. And even some sectors I never suspected I would like working for them, such as fintech and placemaking. And then that brings me to the now, I guess, because I left the Future Laboratory in 2019 and I decided to move back to Paris, where I work now as a freelance foresight strategist.
Really interesting. I mean, by the way, just to, right back to the earliest part of that really fascinating sort of route to where you are now. So back in Florence, just talked a bit about that, about what you were getting up to there and what that experience was like.
So basically, I decided to go there because I was studying, as I told you, in a very traditional business school in Paris. And as I got more interested in the trend forecasting area, I was putting people on LinkedIn or on social media that were working in this field. And I realized there were more specialized in design or innovation or pure trend forecasting. So I just realized I needed maybe to elaborate a bit my CV to be able to offer something different than, hey, I've been studying in business school. So I moved to Florence for 2 months, and it was this kind of, you know, accelerated program where you learn about communication, trend forecasting, ethnography, anthropology a bit as well. And it was really, really interesting because I just felt like in 2 months, I've been studied what I could have studied in 1 year. So it was definitely a great move to go there, I think.
Okay. And then how about when you were linking up with the Copenhagen Institute of Future Studies? Because, again, they're such an interesting organization. I mean, I personally have been quite involved with them for many years on and off. But, yeah, I always find them to be really, really dynamic thinkers. So perhaps just talk us through your experience there and what you got up to.
Yeah, so basically when I moved to London to work with Geraldine Wari, I got an offer at Copenhagen Institute for Future Studies to work as an intern. And I declined the offer because I wanted to move to London And later on, I think 6 months after, they sent me another offer to be part of what they used to call the Global Scanning Network.
Yeah.
Which I think it just closed last month, unfortunately. Mm. And basically, it's a network of people who are part of an online platform where you can discuss various subjects about the future. And I was specialized in retail and organizations and people and well-being. Mm-hmm. And basically, so we were, I think, maybe 20 people in the program, if I'm correct. And every month or every 2 weeks, we had to write what they called horizon scannings.
Yep.
About a topic that we've been reading in the media and we want to analyze a bit further, or something that really interests us. Sorry. So it was really nice to have the opportunity to connect with these people, because we came from very different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the route to where you are now, looking at this through the eyes of perhaps, you know, a graduate who will be graduating in a few months' time, but what would your advice be now for someone who's looking to follow in your footsteps in terms of how to do it? Would you do it differently, or would you go through exactly the same sort of a process, which does sound to have been really, really interesting, it has to be said.
I think I will do the same, because based on my experience, the past one and the current one in the foresight industry, I think what was my main strength was to be able to work in trend forecasting, being able to spot the interesting cultural shift happening at the moment. Mm. But because I had the background in international business and marketing, I felt like I'm also able to feel the sense of the business reality. I don't know if I'm making myself clear here, but it's not just about finding some stuff that are inspiring for companies, but to make them actionable.
Yeah.
Well, to connect them to the reality of their business and to the reality of their challenges. So I think it's interesting to have both sides in your background, the more business related one and the one that is more inspiring and related to trend forecasting.
Okay. And then what about locations? Because, I mean, in terms, if you've, you know, as you say, just saying, have really focused where you've been, if you say physically, around essentially Paris, Florence, London, Copenhagen, etc., and back to Paris. What about other cities now? So where now would you say, would it be, again, the same list of cities, or are there other cities coming up that you would say, oh, you know what, that's the place to go to for a few months or longer to get some experience because it's so dynamic. So, where do you think now is the place to be, if it's not the ones you've already mentioned?
I would not say Paris, unfortunately. Because especially in my industry, the foresight industry, I feel there is a gap. Mm-hmm. London is still definitely an interesting place, because you have so many interesting companies and people working in the sector of foresight who are based in London. So I definitely recommend going to London to work in this industry.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I've been interested recently in countries in Scandinavia, mm-hmm. because I feel like they have a different approach, are less mature in a way in this industry, but they come with very insightful and inspiring skills in the foresight industry. So maybe I'm considering, maybe in the future, if I'm moving to a new place, it will be in Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then what about your approach and, if like, your ethos? So I'm interested in, it's always very fascinating, I think, when I talk with people who've jumped out of agency land or consultancy land in terms of, you know, the big management consultancies or whatever, or the big brands, to do their own thing, to get a grip on if you like, what their approach is and how this works for them. So perhaps just talk us through, what your ethos is and how you would approach projects in a way that perhaps it would be different from, you know, a big agency pitching for the same sort of project.
Yeah, so at the moment, I specialize in three main areas, I will say. The first one is trends intelligence and cultural research, which is about spotting the next shift and emerging attitudes or cultures that will impact businesses in the future. Mm-hmm. The second is more pure consumer research, which deals with actually interrogating innovators, experts, early adopters, or consumers to unlock new consumer behavior. And the last one, which is connected to the two others actually, is what I called foresight strategy, which deals with marketing strategy using foresight to help brands and company to be better fit in the future. And in terms of my approach, I think what's crucial to me, as I told you, is really to make sure that my findings are not only inspiring for companies, but actionable. So they can create positive change in a way. And when I talk about positive change, I always make sure that my work can have a positive impact on the client I'm working on. So just to give an example, when I work for fashion brands, which happened quite a lot in the past months, they're obviously known to be incredible polluters and not always respectful of workers. So I always I always try in my project with them to inject a sense of purpose, trying to help them to be better and to take concrete action for the greater good of people, society, and the planet. And I think another important aspect of my approach to work, maybe it comes from my culture, because, you know, French people have a tendency to dispute many things, to say everything. But I always try to challenge and interrogate my findings. For example, we read everywhere from many articles and very serious studies that Gen Z is the most activist and eco-conscious generation ever born, which is great news. But I just find it funny enough that fast fashion companies that are especially popular within these consumers are registering huge performances. And recently I did a project for a luxury beauty brand, and I interviewed young early adopters, and one of them kept telling me about the importance of ethical and conscious consumption for her. But her favorite brands were H&M and Zara. So at some point she told me very honestly something like, you know, my generation was born with H&M and Zara, so the younger ones will be responsible for consuming better, not me. And she was only 15.
Wow.
So this is just to say how important is it to question our findings to make sure they can provide positive change, but without being disconnected to the reality. Because in that case, it will be very, let's say, utopian and almost unrealistic to tell my clients, oh, listen, your consumers of tomorrow will only consume from ethical brand. And I guess it will be very easy for me to just repeat what I've been reading everywhere, but it will not be honest and I will not bring any added value here. So it's really about using our instinct and a critical eye as well to find the balance between what I call the possible futures and the ideal ones.
And actually, on that exact point about possible futures versus sort of ideal ones or a sort of sense of utopia. So go on then. So at the moment, what sort of things are really grabbing your attention?
I'm reading a book at the moment, which is called The Ideal City, written by Space 10, which is IKEA's innovation lab. I think it's how they describe themselves. And it's about finding solutions and using future foresight design to build the city of tomorrow. And I'm really interested in this right now because recently we saw so many articles everywhere saying that the cities were dead as people massively left them during the pandemic. And I feel that first we need to recontextualize a bit this trend because, yes, people were leaving the cities, for example, to get closer to natural spaces, but it was only privileged people. And second, when we say the city is dead, I tend to disagree with that, because I think what's really changing here is that the city, as we know it, is over.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what this book from Space 10 is about, trying to use our design skills to build the cities of tomorrow that will be resourceful, shared, accessible, safe, and at the end of the day, desirable.
Mm-hmm.
And within this spectrum, there is an interesting concept they talk about in the book called the 15-minute city.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is basically a change of scale, a shift toward, let's say, a more human scale design, where cities become almost like villages.
Mm.
And to make sure that all the services, culture, arts, well-being facilities, education, etc., are accessible to everyone within a 15-minute walk. And I think this is especially relevant for cities such as Paris, because here, for example, you have a lot of cities located in the suburbs around the capital.
Yep.
And they are left with poor resources and very little access to art and culture.
Mm.
And especially after 1 year or even more, we don't know yet, of being at home isolated from others, I think it will be crucial to understand how to build our environment, to be able to reconnect with people, with the sense of place, and just with our collective well-being, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And then what about away from, let's say, collective well-being, and you're talking earlier on about that ethos of sort of, you know, the people, planet, etc. What about things that are worrying you at the moment, that are concerning you in terms of things that are impacting on society? So when we're looking at sort of a short to medium term,
yeah.
What should society be worried about?
There is something I've been talking about it with many friends recently. And I really don't want to sound politically incorrect here,
mm-hmm.
but I'm actually worried about some very positive conversations that are amplified at the moment, especially among the youngest generation. And you know, these are the conversation around identity and the sense of self,
yeah,
or the quest towards the value of self-love and personal well-being.
Yeah,
and I'm only worried because this conversation are very self-centric in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
And oriented toward individuals only.
Yeah.
But as I said, like, don't get me wrong, I definitely think that these questions are extremely necessary and involve a very positive social evolution. But I also feel they are nourishing our sense of selfishness.
Yeah.
And it reminds me actually of Richard Dawkins' work on a selfish gene.
Yeah,
where it demonstrated that our genes are selfish by nature and only behave for their own survival. And I feel here it's the same problem in a way, because we realize how important and valuable is our personal well-being and our own perception of our identities. But it's empowering in a way, but it's very individualistic. We tend to forget about the value of living in a society. And I also feel that this shift is nourishing new levels of anxiety.
Yeah.
We do not need at the moment. Let's be clear. We are anxious enough at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember a project I did for which one I interviewed a young girl who told me something. She was telling me about TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me something like, before TikTok, I never questioned my identity or sexual orientation. But since I'm always exposed to TikTok videos where people talk about these topics, I cannot stop asking myself questions about this. And she said something like, I'm not sure of who I really am anymore.
Wow.
So I think these questions are extremely necessary and positive. We need to raise them. I 100% agree with this. But I'm just worried that they are reinforcing level of very individualistic behavior and anxious mentalities. And maybe I'm wrong here, and I will be very happy to discuss it with people who disagree with me.
Mm.
But it is my personal take on it.
How interesting. Particularly coming from, you're saying yourself being based in Paris, you know, one can look at this, you know, discussions going on, care of Sartre et al. With regards to the obsession with ultimate freedom of the individual and all the rest of it that he was taken to task by obviously the wonderful Iris Murdoch, who mentioned it was not purely perhaps about a total inner focus. But I thought it was really interesting, that point you say about TikTok. So TikTok and Sartre, there we are. Now there's a conversation to have. Okay, what about, so in that case, in terms of, you know, things like that that you were just talking about, and indeed potentially others, you were talking earlier on about, for instance, the issues with regards to the way that the fashion sector is now center stage with regards to those like Greta Thunberg, who have, you know, really shone a spotlight on the, if you like, the, obviously the carbon outputs associated with that sector. So, you know, so how are you advising or what are your thoughts around how the world of business and certainly some sectors in particular should be reacting to the sort of things that you're noting are of concern?
I think first what I would advise them is to not ignore what's happening at all. Like, you cannot ignore that people are changing or their mentality are evolving. And I think to avoid any negative impact on people and on consumer, they must embrace this kind of emerging mentalities with consumers, but also within their internal organization. And I think the key to me here is really to educate people, to give them the tools and resources internally and externally to understand what's happening, what are the impact it implies, the positive ones, but also the negative ones. And all of this through empathy and emotional intelligence, because people are very sensitive to this kind of questions, especially recently. And I think businesses will have a role to play, almost like life partners or educators, to ensure they embrace the shift and they connect with their audiences. And I think they need to make sure as well they are legitimate to embrace this topic. And I know that purpose has been a buzzword recently.
Yeah.
But it's key for companies to approach these kind of topics with a very purposeful approach. And for example, I was listening to an interview recently about an exhibition that happened in Paris last year. And it was showcasing creative young people and artists from the suburbs, which was quite new because, as I told you, usually they are isolated from the capital. And here they were showcasing their work in a very well-respected museum in the center of the capital.
Yeah.
And the expert interviewed spoke about the recent interest from brands, and especially fashion brands, toward aesthetics and codes that come from the suburbs because it sells.
Yeah.
And what he said was really true to me. It just explains that brands will come to the suburbs to have, let's say, like photo shoots to pillage their codes. And
yeah,
then
yeah.
If you want to be part of the conversation, you, as a company and a business, you need to make sure you are legitimate to do it. You are educated on the topic. And then do it in an organic and purposeful way. Otherwise, consumer will notice it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that notion of brands and brand teams going on what they sort of term as cultural safaris was always deeply dubious when I think that sort of activity really kicked off about sort of 20 or so years ago, and it just seemed wrong then, and just totally with you. It just is highly suspect if one is literally just being a sort of a cultural tourist as opposed to linking in there. Okay, well, so apart from as you're saying, lots of brands up to dubious things, lots of sectors getting it wrong. What about the ones that you actually rate as getting it right? So, you know, who do you point to and go, now there's an example of some, you know, really interesting brands in terms of, putting across either products or services that, you know, have a really useful perspective and or give something back or whatever it is. Perhaps let's talk a bit about brands that are getting it right and why and how that is.
That's a good question, actually, because I feel there are so many brands, products, and services that are created every day or that innovate every day. It sometimes becomes difficult to cut some through the noise, I feel. And I'm naturally attracted by initiatives happening in the retail or placemaking sectors. I don't know. Maybe it's because it's about spaces, and I feel they're impacting many aspects of our lives. In the retail area, I'm really interested in what Gentle Monster does, because I feel this brand understood how to inject a sense of discovery and curiosity in the retail spaces, and they challenge perfectly the traditional store formats, because honestly, their retail design are always a pleasure for the eyes. You want to go there, to you want to experience the atmosphere in the store. Yep. And when I see what they do, I always tend to forget that it is just an eyewear brand at the end of the day. Another obvious one, I'm really interested in what IKEA is doing. I've been working with them in London, and I really like their. I feel they are really connected to what's happening, and they're always very, very quick to react. And recently, I think they were opening some very small store format in key cities, just to reflect local communities. And I think it was just a very smart move from them.
Yeah.
Apart from retail, I would like to mention Ericsson as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
because our leading research is at the moment on what they call the Internet of Senses, which is a concept that I find absolutely fascinating. It's an exploration of how technology could interact in the near future with our five senses in a very concrete way. And I think they published a report about it last year, and I really encourage people to read it.
Yeah.
And maybe I just want to add an example about fashion, because as I told you, it was what really interested me in the first place.
Yeah.
And I know Gucci is the absolute example of a brand that everyone is looking at, because they obviously had proven how to turn a heritage brand into a desirable one, especially for a younger consumer, just as Bottega Veneta is doing at the moment. Mm-hmm. But what I really find interesting in the Gucci case is how they are reinjecting a sense of playfulness and pleasure into fashion consumption. Because as I told you, fashion is facing so many challenges at the moment, like how to get clean, how to get ethical, inclusive, adaptive, and so on.
Yeah.
And I personally think this is important, but we must not forget that fashion is related to emotions and pleasure. Like, you buy a piece of clothes because you want to please yourself.
Yeah.
So it's important for a fashion brand such as Gucci, who understood it, to get serious, to tackle these important issues, but to keep in mind as well that fashion is about pleasure.
Yeah, yeah. How interesting. Can I just go back slightly on that one? When you mentioned about Ericsson and Internet of the Senses, perhaps you could just talk a bit more about that, because that sounded, really, really interesting.
So basically, I was working for a media company on the future of the streaming. So Ericsson researches really so that advances in technology will be enabled to really full our senses by something like 2025. So they're working on the ability to, for example, like being able to have a feel of touch from a screen, or of smell, like having like digital sense. And I just think like it's so important for brands, because obviously they already moved to the digital world. Then they are mixing physical and digital to do something that we called phygital.
Sure.
But I think they need to go beyond the screen to be able to create a sensory digital world. So I think it's what they are doing is, I think they are the only one doing this kind of research, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
And they communicate it in a very comprehensive way. So yeah, I think it's a very interesting concept for the future of brand communication and brand experience.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. You mentioned earlier on the Ideal City that you've been reading recently. Anything else that you've been reading that we should tell the listeners all about?
I love this question because with the pandemic, I think like a lot of people, I was left at home with a lot of free time.
Mm.
And at some point, I lost interest in what I usually like to do, such as reading. And only because I think I felt forced to do it in order to kill all this free time.
Yes.
And I'm finally enjoying reading again. So I bought recently a lot of very interesting books, and I'm reading several ones at the same time to keep myself entertained.
Yep.
So I told you about The Ideal City by Space 10.
Yep.
The second book I'm reading at the moment is Think Again by Adam Grant.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm correct, it was published earlier this year, and it was an absolute bestseller.
Mm.
And I could not get my hand on it, as it was sold out everywhere. And luckily, a friend of mine had it and gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is what is linked to what I told you at the beginning of our conversation about being able to challenge and question what we know. And it praises the benefit of doubt. And I think what's interesting is that it's showing us through great storytelling how to get curious and become better at embracing the unknown and enjoying to get wrong.
Mm.
And my last book recommendation, so it's an essay from, I think it was from 1912.
Yeah.
By artist Kandinsky.
Yeah.
And it's called Concerning the Spiritual in Art. It was recommended by someone I work with, and it's super interesting for any job in the foresight industry because you realize when you read it that more than a century ago, Kandinsky conceptualized the theory of innovators and early adopters in the art world.
Wow.
So it's so interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't want to read it, you can search on Google. If you type the Concerning the Spiritual in Art pyramid, you can find a graphic that illustrates the theory behind it.
Wow, fantastic. Well, do both.
Yeah.
Okay, what about as we sort of look forward to the rest of this year and perhaps into early next? What are you up to then? So what have you got coming up in your life?
So at the moment, I must admit it's a bit difficult to project myself into the short-term future, even for someone who works in foresight.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So the next thing coming right now in my professional life is to continue growing my portfolio of clients in France and elsewhere and continue to do what I love doing, which is my job.
Mm.
But in the more medium and long term, I think I would like to open my own agency, especially in Paris, because I feel it's such an interesting place for this because contrary to London, the foresight industry is not yet super well developed. And very broadly speaking, in Paris, you either work in a very traditional fashion trends forecasting agency where you are forecasting the colors and materials for the next seasons, or you are in strategic planning in a communication or advertising agency. And I'm conscious I'm really stereotyping the situation here, especially since a lot of interesting companies are opening and or they are diversifying their activities toward foresight.
Mm.
But I feel there is definitely a gap and an opportunity to bring what I learned in London to Paris.
Mm.
And apart from that, I also started working on a podcast project.
Good.
Which is about people telling their stories of a person they met at some point.
Mm, interesting.
Impacted their personal or professional life.
Mm-hmm.
It's still work in progress at the moment. And I would love actually to write a book one day because I've dreamt about it since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I can ask you some advice about the podcast and the book later on.
Feel free. What a sort of a minimal amount of advice I can give you, but happy to do so.
Right.
Okay. What about your views on, I mean, in fact, if there's a sort of a thread of continuity that's gone through all of the many interviews I've done with this series, talking with some really, really interesting people, again, obviously very much like yourself. So I've been really linking it around, you know, the three key areas to me of hope, community, and resilience that that to me certainly have really been highlighted during the pandemic. So yeah, perhaps just give us your views on that, on hope, community, and resilience. What do you think about those three issues?
I don't want to sound too spiritual here.
Feel free.
But I think what's important, especially in these times where I think we realize individually but collectively as well that nothing was granted, or when there is so much happening, it becomes difficult to cope with all this noise. So what's important is to work on our ability to question our current issues. I'm not saying here that we need to support any conspiracy theory or whatever, but it's just so important, I think, to stay open-minded and curious about others. So we can work on our critical eye and we can interrogate what we know or what we think we know. So I think curiosity will help us to find some hope and resilience individually and as a community. Mm-hmm. Curiosity is like a muscle. So the only way to stay open to new opportunity and change is to fuel and nourish our curiosity.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm making myself clear here, but
yeah, you are totally.
Cool. I think I strongly believe that our only way to build resilience and to embrace change is to stay curious.
Yep. Fantastic. And then what about the issues around, and I know you've alluded to this earlier on, but community. And just how important or not, perhaps, the idea of communities has been to you personally during the pandemic?
I think this notion of community was very key to me because when the pandemic started, it was just 2 months after I moved from London to Paris. Mm-hmm. So I was back home. I felt to be part of my home community again. Mm. And all of a sudden, two months later, I was cut from this community.
Of course, yeah.
So I think I've done a lot of work on this notion of community. And what's really interesting is even if we are in a globalized society, I think we realize that people and consumers are more and more attached to their local community or to the communities that are at least closer to them.
Yeah.
So I think it's for spaces, for brands, for initiatives, it's so important to be able to feel this sense of place and localized, more than local, community around us.
Yeah. How interesting. And then perhaps just as we begin to get to the end of the interview, it's been really, really interesting. Thank you. But I'm aware that time is against us. So perhaps some sort of takeaway points that you'd like to leave for the listeners in terms of your ethos?
I think I'm going to repeat myself here.
Feel free.
Yeah, it's what I told you earlier about being able to interrogate what we know or we think we know and to challenge a bit the reality we are living. And I think what's important as well is to consider that, okay, times are definitely tough. They are not very joyful at the moment, but I think they imply like very great opportunities for everyone to reconnect after the pandemic, to reconnect together and to create great things.
Yeah. Well, I'm into that. Crikey. Okay, so final thing then, in case just everyone's, so everyone's clear about where they can track you down. So, where are you then in terms of social media and your site, etc.?
I think the easiest way to track me down is on LinkedIn at the moment. On LinkedIn or to People can contact me directly so we can chat about the exciting perspectives of our future for brands and individuals.
Elodie, that's been really, really interesting. Thank you so much. It's been fascinating to have heard your story of actually how you got into the forecasting and futures, we say, sort of sector, and how you worked your way through it through numerous really, really interesting and dynamic organizations. So thank you very much indeed for that. So to Elodie Marteau, the foresight strategist and cultural analyst who helps businesses identify opportunities to future-proof their brand and marketing strategies. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Thanks for listening to the New Abnormal podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please leave a rating, tell your friends, and until next time, goodbye.